and welcome to Canucks Talk. I'm your host, Thomas Drance. Jamie Dodd, away with illness. Day to day. Should be back tomorrow. That's the update on Jamie Dodd. So it's just me, rolling solo with you today. Of course, I am coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, is powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? And of course, since I am alone on the mic today, although I'm not really alone, and I'll tell you what guests we have lined up for you for this big, momentous show shortly, I am going to need your help, dear listener. Please use the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line to contribute your 2 cents to this program and to keep me in topics. Because everyone knows, when it comes to finding things to say and filling airtime, I am lost without you, the dear listener, my dear listeners. Our dear listeners, and of course the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line is brought to you by Dunbar Lumber. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. Everybody, today is a momentous day. A historic day with all eyes trained south of the border. A titanic tilt will unfold this evening. Okay? It pits a blue team against a team that's increasingly incorporating orange, and more brazenly incorporating orange as the years go by. It is a high-stakes tilt with no less than the fate of the Western world on the line this evening when the Vancouver Canucks face the Anaheim Ducks at the Honda Center in Anaheim. So to get you prepared for that big matchup, let's open the whiteboard.
All right now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
Welcome to the whiteboard for Tuesday, November 25th. Here's what's up around the Vancouver Canucks today. Beginning with the headlines, the Canucks face the Anaheim Ducks at the Honda Center in Orange County, California. This evening, the Canucks will be going for their second straight victory to begin this three-game California road swing. Of course, their first victory coming on Saturday night against the San Jose Sharks. A victory that was exciting, but was not remotely convincing. I think a lot of Canucks fans will be hoping to see more from Vancouver tonight. However, the Ducks are a pretty interesting opponent. First of all, Anaheim has managed under Greg Cronin, especially down the stretch last season, to hang pretty tight with the Canucks in their head-to-head matchups. Vancouver is the far more talented team. Vancouver is the far more established team. Vancouver is the far more mature team in this contest. And yet, one thing about this Ducks side under head coach Greg Cronin is they are not going to have their young guns flying about the ice, manufacturing offense, and sort of cheating in any way, shape, form, or otherwise. In fact, to be totally honest with you, they might be a tougher opponent tonight if they played that way. If they played a freewheeling game and tested the Vancouver Canucks off the rush, I mean, we've seen teams, even the Sharks, put real pressure on Vancouver's defense, attacking them vertically and with speed through the neutral zone. This Ducks team, however, plays a composed, controlled, conservative game. So even though there is guys that can burn you with skill like Troy Terry and electric young talents, guys like Mason McTavish and Lucas Carlson, right? This Ducks team, this Ducks team is going to most likely play ponderous, conservative hockey this evening. And that does pose, in some ways, something of a challenge, especially for a Canucks team that, you know, has been a little bit vulnerable in terms of permitting their opponents to generate shots from the inner slot, and that hasn't exactly been blowing the doors off of non-Chicago opponents from an offensive standpoint in the early going this season. Now, again, as a viewer, right, and someone who really admires what the Ducks are building in terms of the quality of their young talent, you know, there's an extent to which I don't enjoy watching the way that they play. But I will say, you know, I know a lot of people who worked closely with Greg Cronin during his time in the Toronto Maple Leafs organization. He obviously had a tremendous amount of success at the American League level in the Colorado Avalanche organization. I mean, he's come from progressive places where he is very highly regarded. So I'm not going to go and say something like, I think the way that the Ducks play and really trying to drill in defensive habits to this young group is wrong, big picture. I don't particularly enjoy watching it, but perhaps there's method to this madness, and in time, it might show fruit. But in the meantime, as much as you think the Ducks are a classic young team, in some ways, there's meaningful differences in terms of what you should expect watching the game tonight. You're going to see a pretty restrained Ducks game plan, but they definitely have, you know, some young horses that can hurt you, including guys like Pavel Minchukov and Olin Zellweger on the back end. Zellweger, of course, got his first career goal against the Canucks last season. Those guys are a ton of fun to watch and can do real damage. So, interesting test for a Canucks side that should be very heavily favored going into tonight's game. We'll get into some of the implications of this a little bit further in the lineup notes, but one thing that's worth noting is that the Vancouver Canucks have swapped Archdeep Baines off their 23-man roster, reassigning him to the Abbotsford Canucks, who happen, as it is, to be also in California, and they've recalled Atu Ratu. Now, this was sort of telegraphed by the way that the Canucks skated at practice on Monday at the Honda Center. The Athletic's Harmon Dial, my close colleague, reported that Archdeep Baines had been centering the fourth line in terms of line rushes and drills at that practice. Archdeep Baines has not played center at the professional level. We sort of knew that another shoe would have to drop before tonight's game, and so it has. One thing that's interesting is the Canucks did have the roster space in terms of the 23-man roster to just straight up call up Ratu outright. The swap, however, allows them to toll that extra cap space, something we know the club is keen to do and has done so liberally in other instances throughout this season. As such, you know, the implications of this from an Archdeep Baines perspective is a little bit tougher to unpack. Certainly seems like Pew Suter, however, is going to get a look at in the top six, and perhaps it's going to be a minute before we see Baines recalled again here. So interesting opportunity for Ratu, and perhaps we'll see what Baines can do on a line, maybe even with Jonathan Lekaramäki, at the AHL level here as he goes down. Let's open up the... Oh, sorry, one other note I did want to bring up. Interesting commentary from Jake DeBrusk over at The Athletic. Harmon Dial's latest is over there, and you can go read more for how DeBrusk is viewing his own slow start. I felt like a rookie is one of the main comments that he had to make or that he had to say in sort of providing insight into the adjustment that he's faced growing accustomed to a new team. Of course, DeBrusk, and this has been well publicized, has just one goal in his first 10 games with the Canucks. Thought this detail was fun. He talked about adjusting to new line mates and building chemistry and noted that JT likes rimming pucks around the wall when the club is set up in the offensive zone, which I didn't figure out until probably like four games of playing with him. Go figure. Love to see a guy handle, you know, the pressure, the stress of wanting to make a good impression, of maybe not being 100% on your game and on the front foot in terms of your form to start with. Handling it with a sense of humor, providing insight into the work that he's sort of putting in to get his game to where he wants it to be and why he's confident that he can turn it around. Highly recommend reading that. A fabulous insight into the thought process behind being, you know, one of those top six but non-elite scoring wingers in the NHL and how difficult it can be to work through those sort of cold streaks, especially when you're trying to make such a big first impression as a marquee free agent for the first time in your career, signing of a new team. All right, let's open the broadsheet. Sportsnet's Elliot Friedman was on Donnie and Dolly today, talking about Vancouver looking for a defenseman. Now, we've been talking about this for a couple of weeks, but now you're really starting to hear it out there in terms of the big national insiders, and I think that speaks volumes about how the Canucks are thinking about their own roster and perhaps about what we can expect from them over the balance of this campaign. The way that Friedman framed it, he said, Rutherford is fly fishing in checking out the market. Excellent. That's a great way of thinking about it and framing it and putting it. Plus, you have the image of a Jim Rutherford in, you know, boots up to his waist in the water looking for some defenders.
Galoshes
to bring in to flesh out the bottom four. Hopefully it's not a catch and release exercise like it was with Ian Cole and Nikita Zadorov last season. The thing about Vancouver's defense that we've sort of gone through, right, that we've gone through again and again here, is with Quinn Hughes on the ice, and it's obviously Quinn Hughes and Filip Peronik on the ice, this Canucks team looks like a contender, right? They're, in fact, and this is amazing because we know that Pettersson's form has sputtered a bit, and we suspect, just from watching the game and from looking at sort of the splits with and without Hughes, we suspect that Miller isn't driving through the first 10 games the way he did last season, probably because he's at some percentage of readiness below 100%, given some of what we've witnessed over the course of the season, including those, you know, games where he couldn't take draws. Now, despite that, at the top end of the lineup, Vancouver's top gear actually looks like it's firing at a healthier, more imposing clip than it did even at any point last season. Even down the stretch when their underlying numbers became elite as a group, what the team is doing right now with their top pair on the ice looks elite, elite, elite. Flat out. Looks like the sort of top gear that can hang with just about anyone in the NHL, except maybe the Edmonton Oilers when they're fully dialed in and have Connor McDavid healthy and in the lineup. I mean, that's how good the Canucks have been at the top of the lineup. The problem is in all other minutes, you know, Vancouver isn't controlling play ably, right? And they are also spending too much time in their offense, in their own zone, and are regularly getting outscored. Now, the emergence of Erik Brännström has actually helped stem the bleeding here to some extent, by some measure of degrees, the fact that Brännström has come in and given the Canucks an additional puck-moving presence and a solid one who's played solid defense and helped the Canucks outscore their opponents 5-on-5 has given Vancouver some breathing room in terms of what those non-Hughes minutes look like, and it's still not enough. And they're still tweaking and sort of fuffing with the third pair here in terms of trying to get the mix right. Now, again, we'll get a little bit more into this in lineup notes, but there is still a body, obviously, to add, and ideally a body that would permit you to experiment, perhaps, with breaking up that second pair where, look, we know what Soucy and Myers can do. We know how good they were defensively for this team down the stretch. We know that Soucy was, you know, by some measures, specifically the team's record with him in the lineup, you know, a key linchpin of this team's success last season. And yet, for whatever reason, that pair, so good in a matchup, head-to-head role against Connor McDavid in the Stanley Cup playoffs last year, has just been stuck in their own end of the rink shift after shift. It's mystifying that the club hasn't sort of tweaked that pair at any point through 10 games, given sort of what it's looked like. But also, it's inexplicable that it's fallen off this dramatically, given the success of that group, success of both players individually last season, but also their work as a pair when they got to the Stanley Cup playoffs and faced literally the toughest competition that exists on planet Earth and did a commendable job, to say the least, in those minutes. So club needs to figure out something to sort of fix what ails them on that second pair. Casting a wide net, exploring your options, fly fishing, as Friedman would have it, clearly vital for this club to do, and ultimately probably to actually reel one in if you're going to reach your ceiling case as a club. I want to add this too. Friedman also suggested on Donnie and Dolly that it was only a matter of time. Jonathan Lekkerimäki, he suggested, isn't far away from getting a look in Vancouver. Fascinating. Now, look, straight up, if you are a 20-year-old forward in the American League and you are generating well north of 5 shots per game, even if you're not quite scoring at a point per game clip yet, even if the goals haven't necessarily come, and even if your plus minus looks a little bit wonky, even if it's in the red a little bit, It's a very strong sign that you might be too good for the level. And boy, would that be an exciting prospect for the Canucks. If Lekkerimäki has gone down, especially given that, you know, his cup of coffee didn't in the American League last season didn't exactly go off like gangbusters. Like, if he's gone down to the American League to start this season and is truly too good for that level, which there is certainly some statistical case to be made there, that would be tremendous. That would be a massive, massive development for this team, even if they do seem flush with scoring wingers at the moment. We'll see how this goes, but, you know, you think about Vancouver's power play, how much that struggled. Could Lekkerimäki help there day one? It's an interesting prospect, interesting thing to think about. That said, one thing I will note, I would love to see the club maybe wait it out a bit, just because there is still some gap in terms of the 5-on-5 performance with Lekkerimäki based on close observers that I'm chatting with. I still think I'd like to see him drive play a little bit more reliably at 5-on-5, because we've seen it with Daniel Sprong across his first, you know, 10-game stretch with the Canucks, and he hasn't been in the lineup for all of those 10 games. We obviously saw it with Andre Kuzmenko last year. We've seen it with Nils Höglander again this season, up and down the lineup and on and on. You know, it's one thing to be an uber-talented offensive forward that's going to earn you a look from Rick Tocchet, but if you can't hack it at a very high level in terms of defensive reliability, and on this team that's bleeding scoring chances against, not bleeding scoring chances against, but surrendering them at a rate that's, you know, far more permissive, far more hospitable to their opponents than it was last season, you know, I don't know that you want to bring him in to get a shot at the NHL level and then have him bouncing around the lineup and then ultimately end up back in the American League, where his confidence has to be rebuilt. He's off to such a great start. Maybe let him actually dominate for a month or so. I think that's what I'd prefer to see, just as a neutral observer here and sort of thinking my way through it. I'd love to see Lekkerimäki dominate, not just in terms of generating shots, not just leaving us some breadcrumbs in terms of, hey, I might be too good for this level, but make it undeniable. And when you bring him up, hope that he's never going down, because that's certainly within a realistic range of outcomes based on how impressive his start to this American League campaign has been. I'd love to see the club exercise just a wee bit of patience here in terms of how they handle what's next. Lineup notes for the Canucks game in Anaheim. The Canucks did not do formal line rushes, according to Harmon Dial, but based on the jersey colors the club wore, he surmises, and he was also at practice, and this is a close match with how the club practiced on Monday. Tocchet, of course, usually does practice the way he will play. DeBrusque with Miller and Besser on the top line, no surprise there. Pew Suter, the hero of San Jose, remains in the top six, this time on the left wing with Pettersson and Connor Garland. That's two pretty reliable drivers playing with Pettersson. A good environment for the Canucks center to get right against this Ducks team tonight. Heinen remains with Teddy Bluger and Kiefer Sherwood on a third line. And how about this fourth line? Nils Höglander, Atu Ratu, and Daniel Sprong. Flat out, if the Canucks were facing a team that was rolling out a Höglander, Ratu, Sprong fourth line, I'd be saying and previewing the matchup and like really hammering the point home, like, hey, that fourth line is something you're going to have to watch for. That's a lot of offensive pop for the Canucks on the fourth line. Kevin Lankinen will start his second consecutive game on Tuesday night in Anaheim. Rick Tocchet confirmed. That's also per Dial. And Derek Forbert is not on the ice for the Canucks at morning skate. He left practice on Monday after getting tangled up, seemed to be favoring his lower body. Been such a tough first month of the season for Derek Forbert, who, of course, was away attending to a personal matter, which was, it turned out to be the death of his father, and now maybe has sustained an early season injury. What an awful run out for Forbert, both personally and in terms of his availability here, or his potential availability tonight on Tuesday. So that's the latest with the Canucks lineup. We'll see exactly how the Canucks sort of proceed in terms of the calibration and makeup of their third pair in particular. In terms of the playoff forecast, as a result of the Edmonton Oilers losing last night, dropping a 3-0 result to the New Jersey Devils on their barnstorming tour of Western Canada, the Canucks are currently, per Dom's Lecision's model at The Athletic, projected to finish a point ahead of the Oilers again, 95% likely to make the playoffs, and currently projected to repeat as the first place team in the Pacific Division. A lot of work to do there, but the fact that the Canucks have spotted themselves this type of lead in the Pacific, the fact that the Canucks have racked up points at this clip and have done so while playing hockey that's looked pretty mid to the eye test, I think does reflect a team that's, you know, got something pretty significant going for it in terms of the overall talent level. Lots to iron out, but I think we can take the fact that this team hasn't played anything approaching their best hockey and has still had an enormous level of success in the early going. I think we can take that to heart. I think we can take that as a major data point in terms of judging the true talent level of this hockey club. It's certainly trending to be higher than it was last season even, and higher than it has been for any Canucks team or roster since certainly 2012 or 2013, over a decade now, without question. The Canucks, by the way, as we move to the gambling odds, are minus 260 favorites in Anaheim tonight. Healthy dose of respect on the road against a moribund Anaheim Ducks side. The over-under is set at 6, and there is slightly more steam on the under. Market not responding with a ton of confidence on a 6-goal over-under. And that'll wrap it for the whiteboard. November 5th, 2024, a momentous day as the Canucks get set to take on the Ducks. All right, we'll be back on the other side of the break. We've got Matt Marchese. You are listening to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.